Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. The Sustainable Futures Forum held at University College Cork in February 2025 brought together leading voices in biodiversity, climate action and environmental education. The second edition of the conference featured powerful contributions from ornithologist and sound recordist Sean Ronayne, along with Mooney Goes Wild regulars Aina Nilana and Niall Hatch, who share their insights on Ireland's nature crisis. In this special documentary, Mooney Goes Wild reporter Terry Flanagan meets the key stakeholders from the Environmental Protection Agency, Creative Ireland and UCC's student and staff community who are working across science, policy and the arts to shape a more sustainable future.
Planet Earth is alive with wonder. From the tiniest insect to the largest whale. Every creature adds its own magic to the world. Biodiversity is what makes our planet feel so full of energy, colour and connection. Just think of a rainforest. Vibrant birds, frogs in dazzling colours, and plants growing in every direction. That's just one glimpse of nature's creativity. And it's happening everywhere, across oceans, deserts, mountains, and even in your own backyard. It's not just beautiful, it's life itself. But the world is facing a biodiversity crisis. We've known this for a while now. It's not new. But somehow, we've managed to push it to the side. Maybe we think it'll just go away on its own. Or maybe we're hoping the next generation will sort it out. But one way or another, it's here. And it's a lot closer than we'd like to think. Now, when we hear the words climate change, it doesn't always sound like a crisis. Global warming, it almost sounds gentle. Just a degree or two hotter. What's the big deal? Well, it seems that human activity is changing the planet, and the climate crisis is fueling the nature crisis. Species are vanishing at a rate not seen in millions of years. And this isn't just happening in the Amazon, it's happening right here at home. In Ireland, one in five bird species is threatened with extinction. Our once common curlew, the one with the haunting, beautiful call, is now critically endangered.
For many years, I've been involved in monitoring and counting shorebirds and waders that turn up in Ireland every winter. And one species which stands out to me is the curlew.
Ornithologist Eric Dempsey.
Each winter, we have big numbers of curlews arriving into Ireland from Scotland and from Northern Europe and from Europe. And when you show someone a flock of roosting curlews, maybe 350 birds, and then you tell them, well, that curlews are on the red list and they're in big trouble, they sort of find it hard to believe, because they will say, oh, I'll go out to the coast and I always see curlews. But it's important to remember that the curlews we're seeing in winter are not Irish birds. The Irish breeding population has declined from over 10,000 pairs only 20 years ago to approximately 150 pairs of breeding curlews. Think about that. From 10,000 to 150 breeding pairs. Curlews are, in fact, the indicator species, the barometer, for want of a better term, of the state of our biodiversity. Species like curlews are a very obvious indicator of the state of our habitats and our biodiversity. And it's not just curlews, because while curlews are declining because of their breeding grounds being impacted by how we manage our land, by the destruction of our boglands, by the forestation of areas where they once bred. But it's every other species within that same ecosystem that is equally suffering the same declines, be they insects, moths, butterflies, mammals, and plants. Our biodiversity is part of our natural heritage. It is as important as any other heritage that we have. It is who we are. And curlews are in big trouble, and they are the canary in the mine. They will tell us something is wrong, and we really need to act, and act very, very fast, in order to preserve our biodiversity and to possibly restore the biodiversity that we have lost.
Nature is sounding the alarm. And the good news is, scientists and nature lovers everywhere are paying attention.
Hi Terry, you're very welcome to UCC for our Sustainable Futures Forum.
Thank you very much. This is the Glucksmann. I've never actually been in this building before. It's a beautiful building. We're looking out here.
Earlier this year, University College Cork hosted the second Sustainable Futures Forum. This is a high-level thought leadership gathering discussing critical climate and sustainability issues of national and international importance. Marguerite Nyhan is Professor of Engineering for Sustainability in the School of Engineering and Architecture at University College Cork. She leads Sustainable Futures at UCC.
So today we have brought together some leading figures from Ireland to discuss the climate crisis and the nature crisis. So you can see we have a very exciting programme of speakers today. In the morning we're going to hear about the nature crisis. We're going to hear from Sean Renan. He's going to talk about nature preservation and birdsong. Then we're going to have a panel discussion entitled Towards a Nature Positive Future. That's going to be chaired by Professor John O'Halloran, who's president of UCC and an ornithologist. And indeed Sean Renan, Aidan Nilauna and Niall Hatch, the Head of Communications from Birdwatch Ireland, they're all going to join that panel, and they're going to discuss solutions to the nature crisis. They're going to discuss the importance of biodiversity, the importance of nature. They're going to talk about policy and strategy for moving us towards a nature-positive future going forward.
So it's great that UCC are taking on this. I think this is your second forum.
This is our second forum, yes. We had our first Sustainable Futures Forum at the end of 2023, just ahead of COP28. And during that forum, we welcomed world leading figures, including Mary Robinson, who is former President of Ireland and Chair of the Elders. And we welcomed experts from the World Bank, from Microsoft and many more leading organisations to UCC. And we discussed solutions to the climate crisis, but also how to scale up ambition in relation to climate justice.
Are you excited then for today?
I'm really excited for today. You know, we've brought together fantastic speakers, experts in government departments in Ireland, experts from environmental agencies, from industry, from academia and more to UCC. And I really hope that the informative and inspiring discussions that we have today will really shape solutions for the nature crisis and the climate crisis going forward.
Okay, well, we can hear everybody coming in here, so I suppose we better go and check in.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you.
So good morning, everybody. Cate Mila Foyle, Gidi Colossian Hull Scholar Kirky, Madnanouf. Before I commence my own note, I have a very special message this morning from Uachtarán na hÉireann, Michael D. Higgins. Mar Uachtarán na hÉireann, I'm delighted to extend my warmest regards to all gathered today in the Glucksmann Gallery for this important Sustainable Futures Forum at University College Cork. The commitment of all of you who seek to address the urgent challenge of our time, both inspiring and essential for the well-being of our precious planet and for future generations. At this time, the world faces unprecedented environmental challenges, where the twin crises of climate change and biodiversity loss demand urgent, sustained action, the work that you are all undertaking through research, advocacy, teaching, and collective actions is of profound importance. Sustainability is not just an aspiration, but a necessity, requiring collaboration across all disciplines, communities, and nations. If we are to build an ethical and inclusive society that is both just and sustainable, we must reimagine our interrelationship with nature, rediscover resonance, recognizing nature not as something separate from us, as something merely to exploit, but a very foundation upon which our lives depend. The Sustainable Futures Forum plays an important role in essentially rethinking our relationship.
One of the highlights of the morning session was a panel discussion entitled Towards a Nature Positive Future, chaired by Professor John O'Halloran. The panel included writer and broadcaster Aine Ní Leabhar, wildlife sound recordist Sean Renane, and Niall Hatch, head of communications and development at Birdwatch Ireland.
So, here in Europe, our nature is alarmingly in decline and with more than 80% of habitats in poor condition. Aine, can you maybe outline briefly your view of habitat loss in Ireland? Why should we be so concerned? And what are the major challenges here, really, Aine? Thank you.
Well, if I can put out my case to a certain extent, in Ireland, biodiversity loss is caused by land use change, invasive species, pollution, and then climate change. Because really, habitat loss is the root cause of biodiversity loss in Ireland. Now, when you think about it, I know it was already mentioned several times, but to put it into stark figures, boglands and fenlands have gone down from 16% of the country when it was 1.17 million hectares. It's gone down to less than a quarter of a million hectares. It's gone down to 3.8%. It has declined by 77.1%. from what it used to be to what it is. It's gone down by that much. And it's worst in the raised bogs. We've only 10% of our raised bogs left. Why? Because these places have been reclaimed for two things. They've been reclaimed for agricultural land and they've been burnt, peat burning, which is still happening. So that's one of our habitats, gone down by 77%. Now, if we think of grasslands and croplands, as we saw from the EPA report, these cover up to 66% of the country. Now, they're all affected by fertilisers, by reseeding with one or two species, by silage making, by pesticides. So where there were wonderful, rich grasslands before, where you were putting back the bits that were missing, they're all gone now, and we have maybe only one or two actual plants. One type of grass, the other type of grass. They're managed in a different way with silage making. So 66% of the country covered with that, degraded to bits. Forestry covers 11%. We saw that on the picture as well. Two-thirds is conifer. It's commercial conifer plantations. Or it was before Stormy Owen. I don't know what is left now, but we'll know next week, because next week is National Tree Week and we're having starting off with an event in the Botanic Gardens launching National Tree Week, and we'll be talking about that. Then we have our freshwater habitats, which are different from the fens and the bogs. Freshwater is actual water. Half of our surface waters, lakes and estuaries and coastal waters, half of them, according to an EPA 2024 report, half of them are degraded, caused by nutrient pollution from agriculture and wastewater. And there's very high nitrate, there's very high phosphate levels. Only 10% of the river sampling sites and 15% of the lake sampling sites are of pristine condition. I mean, there's five grades, Q5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and there's only that small amount of them in pristine quality left in good, clean, holy, green Catholic Ireland. That's all that's left. And naturally, this has all increased a huge decline in biodiversity in the last 50 years, over 50%. And when you talk about Unforest Forbaha, I started work there in 1974. That is 50 years ago. So on my watch, not my, that I was personally responsible for it, but on my watch over the last 50 years, there's been a decline of 50%. And this is not because the species have become extinct, but the wildlife number populations have gone into steep decline. So you were saying, what are the challenges as I see them? Well, the challenges are, first of all, we the Irish people must realise that this is happening. I mean, us all, academics and people in the know and people who spent years learning about it, we know, but that's no good. The plain people of Ireland must realise this is happening, that it's bad and that it must be fixed. The people must be convinced overwhelmingly. We have to convince them that it's important, that it involves changes in the values that we assign to habitats and wildlife here, that wildlife and habitats are not just the spaces that we don't want. The more spaces we want, we take, and whatever is left, well, sure, can't they retreat off over there? So we need to prioritise restoration and creation of the habitats from the wildlife. Build it and they'll come. I mean, we can't kidnap the curlews and say, come back here and let them off. We have to have the place ready. That we can make the habitat, we can plant the stuff, but after that, the animals have their own minds. If we make it, they'll come. But we have to do it. So that's what I think.
Thank you, Ian. I listen, I can see your passion after 50 years. It's just fantastic. But we need that kind of passion. To your point, we need to be able to tell that story. We need to let people understand the importance of this. And maybe if I could move to birds then. We've shown beautiful sounds from Sean, sounds that we no longer hear in our chorus in the mornings. 63% of bird species are in decline. People use this phrase, red species, listed species, amber and green, and that's some sort of traffic light system about the danger or not of the species. And we know a significant number of them are at risk in Ireland. Can you provide some perspective, Niall, for why we should be concerned about bird loss, connected with the habitat loss, and what have been the key drivers from Birdwatch Ireland point of view and your own experience point of view?
Absolutely, John. I think it's crucial when you look at those figures that it's a shocking state of affairs that fully 63% of Ireland's birds on an all-Ireland basis are either red or amber listed, which means they are a threat of extinction here in Ireland. I think it's important to know that that's done, as I said, on an all-Ireland basis, not just in the Republic. So Birdwatch Ireland, in conjunction with our colleagues in RSPB Northern Ireland, look at the trends, what's happening to species, ones that are declining, ones where their habitats are at severe risk. And we see the fact, therefore, yeah, two-thirds of our birds are on the way out. And this is something that's often, I think, quite hidden from people because they see plenty of birds around the place. You know, you look out the window, you will see birds. You'll see robins and blue tits coming to your garden. So people think that it's not as bad as it seems. But the birds that can best tolerate humans and what we've done to our environment, they're our garden birds. Now, they're wonderful, and it's a great way to introduce people to nature. But I think that that's something that we need to bear in mind. The vast majority of our species do not benefit from our behaviour or our actions at all. In fact, they suffer because of them. And I think that when you're looking at the drivers of those declines across Ireland, it boils down very much to habitat loss.
Conversations like this are not just important. They're essential to finding hope, solutions, and a way forward.
I was here today, Terry, for the very first session of this whole conference.
One of the speakers on the panel discussion was long-standing Mooney Goes Wild contributor Aine Ní Leabhair. Aine set up the Irish Biological Record Centre in 1974 and is responsible for the original distribution maps of mammals and insects. For more than 20 years now, she has lectured postgraduates on sustainability. I wanted to know how important an event like this forum is and what she hopes will be gained from it.
Well, build it and they will come, isn't that what they say about everything? Because, I mean, I suppose there's the wood, looking at the wood and looking at the trees. We were looking at the trees, we were saying, oh, our curlews have gone, our corncrakes have gone, things have changed. But could we bring them back? But bringing them back is no use if the place where they left in the first place is no longer suitable for them. So you really have to go a step further. You have to look at the habitats where they were. I mean, this is a big problem with biodiversity loss in Ireland. It's because of land use change. The amount of change we've done to our grasslands, the amount of change we've done to our bogs, to our forests, to our coastline, all of these things we have changed because of the way we live, because of the way we farm, because of the way we drive, all of those things. And then, of course, it has had an impact on the creatures that live there. So it's rolling back the clock in a sustainable way because people have to live too. We can't all go back to the Stone Age with donkeys and carts. It has to be both. And this is where there's a conundrum, obviously. If it was just easy, we could all do it. So this is why we're having this whole conference today, and it's been approached from different angles to look at this whole concept.
How difficult will it be then to bring habitats back that will be capable of sustaining these species?
Well, it would be so difficult to bring the habitats back if people would agree to have them. The difficulty is hearts and minds, getting people to see that this is absolutely not just worth it for a few creepy crawlies, that it's absolutely essential for the way that we live now, that we need our habitats not just for the wildlife and for the creatures, but for the whole sustainability, for the whole stability, for the whole resilience of the country, of the world where we live. And this is where we have an educational role very much. If people really think this is worthy of doing, they will do it. I mean, during COVID, people thought it was worthy of being locked up and getting vaccines, and they did it. So we need people to be convinced that this is essential, and then it'll follow. I mean, the physicality of doing it isn't so difficult if people will agree to it.
An event like this, this sustainability forum, how important is it?
Well, I mean, we're getting it out there. We're having a whole session, a whole day on it today. And the more this happens, the more people realise that this is what's going on in the world. They can see the climate change happening for themselves before they used to just read about it on the newspapers or on Discovery Channels or somewhere far, far away. But now they're realising that climate change is actually happening on our very doorstep. And if we caused it, we can fix it. So how are we going to fix it? So we need a head of steam to make the powers that be, because going off with your recycling bottle to the recycling bin is not going to fix climate change. No matter how much they tell us every little bit helps, it may well do a little bit. But I mean, what really helps is big changes at the top, and we need to demand those. So people need to know, first of all, that this is necessary, and then go ahead and push for it to happen. And that's why days like this are so very important. For the people that are attending today are all decision makers, bring the message back, make influences in their own areas. So fair play to UCC and to John O'Halloran for organising all this in the first place, because it really is necessary.
Tell me one thing you've learned from today that you'll take away with you.
Well, one thing, Terry, I feel very hard to confine myself to one thing. But one thing is, I suppose, the old shanuckle doesn't go amiss. Ní nearth go cuirle chéile. So there's no strength until we all unite together. And this is a cuirle chéile, so hopefully it'll have nearth as well.
As Aina said, there is no strength without unity. Education, whether it be in a formal setting or in the home, sparks awareness. And awareness drives action. Whether it's teaching kids about pollinators or pushing for stronger environmental laws, informed people make better choices for nature and for the future.
Think that it's just such a beautiful thing to be able to step outside and listen to all of this natural sound. It's all around us. It's free. The more we know about it and the more we can appreciate it, the less likely it is that we're going to let it disappear.
Another contributor to the panel discussion was ornithologist Sean Ronayne. Sean inherited his lifelong love of birds from his father and grandfather. He is founder of Irish Wildlife Sounds, and in 2024, Birdsong, a documentary about Sean's recording project, was released to great acclaim. Also that year, Sean's autobiography, Nature Boy, won Irish Biography of the Year.
Well, it's good to sit in a room with people from different disciplines. It's comforting for me, and I think for everyone, because I can only see things from one angle, and that's my angle. So to know that there are other people, you know, great experts out there working to save the planet, essentially, is a great thing for someone like me to know, because I worry about these things every day. You know, I experience the loss, I see the loss, and it's the last thing that I want.
What people don't realise is they see you as a young lad here. You're actually an educator. You're really a teacher. You're bringing all of this information to people in a beautiful way. You're opening their eyes to nature, and more particularly the loss of nature.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really kind of looked at myself like that or expected to kind of be in this position. And all I do is express my love for nature. And, you know, I can't take credit for the sounds that I share. This is the beautiful sound of nature. And it's a privilege to share it and to stand up for it and give it a voice.
Well, you've done a great job. And it was lovely to listen to you again this morning, because I've listened to you and watched you a number of times. And it's an absolute joy. And you can see the passion in your face when you're given a talk. It must mean so much to you.
Yeah, this means everything to me. I'm really lucky to be in this position, because this work that I do isn't work. I don't know what to call it. I just do what I love. So to be able to do that day in, day out is wonderful. And so, the passion that you hear my voice is real. This is how I experience nature. And that's why I feel so strongly about standing up for it and advocating for it.
Nature gives us so much. Timber, fresh water, fertile soil, minerals. But these resources aren't endless. Sustainable use means taking only what nature can replenish and using it wisely. It's about planning, not just consuming. If we take too much, too fast, we damage the very systems that support life. That's why green flags in both schools and universities are so valuable. They encourage communities to rethink how we use energy, manage waste, and source materials, turning awareness into everyday action.
As you know, John, the Moonie Goes Wild programme has been on air now for 30 years. And I remember about 15 years ago, you were on it from here in UCC because you had won your first green flag for sustainability. What does that mean to you here and to everybody on the campus?
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's 15 years ago. And at that time, we had a group of students who'd come from primary and second level and said, I came to the university and there's no green flag. Why is that so? So for our students, they said, we want to do this. And since then, we've renewed it 5 times. It's accredited by the Federation of Environmental Education in Copenhagen. And the idea here is that we are a reflective institution, looking at all our operations, our teaching and our research to make sure that they are sustainable practices. So what it means in real sense is that a lens is put through every single thing we do in relation to sustainability, procurement, food, waste, teaching, research, the whole lot as an institution.
Professor John O'Halloran is president of University College Cork. He is dedicated to putting sustainability at centre stage in UCC and beyond. Under his leadership, UCC's Green Campus programme became the first third-level institution worldwide to receive the Green Campus Award in 2010. Now ranked as one of the most sustainable universities in the world, UCC has achieved significant impacts, including the development of a sustainability strategy, influencing national policy and winning many international accolades. John O'Halloran believes that sustainability isn't just a one-discipline problem. It needs scientists, economists, designers, educators and communities all working together to find solutions that actually last.
The world is getting more complicated, first of all, and secondly, then we're learning deeper into subject areas. And before this conversation, we talked about immunology. When we started out as biology students, there was very little known about immunology. Now there's entire disciplines, or biochemistry. So the knowledge base is increasing enormously. And that brings a challenge, because suddenly we could be looking at a piece of DNA and the scientists may not know whether it's a plant or an animal, mm-hmm. and may even care less, actually. So what we have together is try to work to make sure that area of interdisciplinarity, that idea of that, we need very strong disciplines, but we also need the connections between disciplines, because that helps us to understand each other and the world's problems. The world's problems are not made up in linear ways or silos. They're made up of much more complex interaction between biology, engineering, humankind, human behaviour, finance, and we can go on. So what we try to do at University College Cork is to bring together talented people to try and solve the world's problems by working in an interdisciplinary way and generating new knowledge to solve those problems.
That came across very much today when I heard you and I heard Aina and I heard Sean Ronayne and Niall Hatch and all of them talking about this interdependence between one group and another.
Yeah.
The architects, the engineers, the ecologists, all needing to sit down together and work out these problems, because we've got huge problems.
We have huge problems, but we've got fantastic solutions too. And you know, the inspiration of Sean's work to bring us to a place in space through sound, as you do as broadcasters, bring us to a place that we can find that's tranquil, that's good for our mental health, helps us to switch on to people who see the world slightly differently and may not see the blackbird, but actually hear the sound. And that is bringing a bigger community of people together to help us solve these problems. Because the climate is changing dramatically. Our habitats are changing. And yet we have to make sure that our people can live in these habitats, have farming in those habitats, and live, but at the same time protect those species and habitats.
How important is a forum like we've had here today?
A forum really is really important, because it enables conversations to happen. It enables conversations to happen across those disciplines, to learn new things, generate new knowledge, create wisdom, but also to create a sense of awareness amongst the community and through broadcasting and social media and other media to enable the message to get out there. Because we can sit here all day in a university and we should, and sometimes will be sitting there generating new knowledge. But actually, unless we help it to be cascaded into the world, to the various measures like today, then it gets lost. And then, you know, you might say it's worthless. I would argue that it isn't worthless because sometimes it takes a long time for knowledge to be translated into to a meaningful application. You're in the University of George Boole. George Boole's mathematics sat for 80 years before suddenly people realised, wow, this is something really special. Now it influences every single technology in the world today.
Going forward, where do you see we'll be in, say, 20 years' time?
Wow, that's a really difficult question. I'm very optimistic. I see the energy in the campus here every day of our young people and our staff who are absolutely committed. I think we will have to trade off some of the economic models that we currently have about delivery and delivering profit all the time. It's going to be, have to be something different from that. Yes, we need economy. Yes, we need support. But we need a sustainable ecosystem. And that can only be achieved by a fairness to everybody, that nobody's left behind, but also a sense of people being valued.
Sustainability is a complex puzzle, and no single field can solve it alone. Scientists help us understand the natural systems we're trying to protect, while economists look at how we can grow without depleting resources. Engineers and designers come up with practical, low-impact solutions, and social scientists explore how people and communities can adapt and thrive. Educators and communicators spread awareness and inspire action. And legal experts help shape the policies that make change possible. When all these voices come together, we get a fuller picture and better answers.
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit of a kind of an unfamiliar term for some people, but basically what we're studying for is to make, how are we going to make cities healthy and livable cities for the future?
John has brought together many talented people from various disciplines within the college. One such person is Lily Purcell. Lily is a PhD student studying environmental engineering.
So cities are kind of growing populations of people, but with increasing urbanisation, we can see the population of the world, about 70% of it is going to be in cities and urban areas. So we're basically looking at loads of different environmental metrics like green space, air quality, emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, energy demand. How can we manage that all with the growing population, but how can we make cities livable, healthy places for everybody? And that's humans, for biodiversity, and yeah, so that it's kind of accessible for all as well, trying to keep the sustainable development goals in mind, but also manage the growing population and how can we measure it, and how can we also measure the progress that are, I suppose, the policy interventions that we're having, local climate action plans and also national climate action plans.
I think that's fantastic, because when I was in college back in the 70s, I can tell you the engineering department was way, way over there and the biology department was over here. We never, ever mixed or integrated. Now you're all working together.
That's it, yeah. And I did my undergrad in civil, structural and environmental engineering here in UCC, and definitely spent a lot of time in between the civil and the electrical engineering buildings as well. However, now I'm based in the Environmental Research Institute. So that's actually a building off campus, so a satellite campus on the Lee Road in the Ellen Hutchins building. And in the Environmental Research Institute, we have people from all different departments, all different disciplines, environmental scientists, engineers, people who study things to do with water, soil, the air around us, everything, anything to do with the environment. And there's people from, you know, the Department of Law and Business in there as well as psychology and sociology. So really the kind of the real interconnections and the synergies between the departments, but that are all linked through the environment. So nowadays, I'm very lucky that we get to kind of study in such an interdisciplinary and a kind of a connected world or a connected campus.
Pollution is often called a silent invader. It creeps into our air, water and soil, often unnoticed until the damage is done. It's one of the biggest threats to biodiversity, destroying habitats and pushing species to the brink. And perhaps the most invisible of all is air pollution. You can't always see it, but its impact is everywhere. Postgraduate student Anna O'Regan has been monitoring air quality in Cork City for a number of years now.
So we were working with the Environmental Protection Agency, where they did a citizen science initiative where they collected data from participants all over Cork City. And then we use that data to integrate it, to build it into our model, to develop a model to better understand air quality across Cork City. And what we found was that over 30% of the population was exposed to nitrogen dioxide levels above the World Health Organization standards, and then a further 10% above the EU regulatory limits.
And how serious a problem is it then, inhaling nitrogen dioxide?
So any form of air pollution, so either particulate matter, which has a lot of health effects, but also nitrogen dioxide, can impact your respiratory system, your cardiovascular system, so it has a lot of negative health impacts for exposure for long-term or short-term periods.
So your studies have shown that it is a serious problem. What can be done now?
Good question. I think there's a lot of, you know, for nitrogen dioxide, that mainly comes from transport. So switching our modes of transport, so switching over from cars to more active modes of transport, utilising public transport, would all help reduce nitrogen dioxide levels. Even the pedestrianisation of the cities in Cork, we also modelled scenarios with that, where we closed down streets and saw the effects that it reduced nitrogen dioxide levels of up to 6 micrograms, which is quite significant.
How difficult will it be then to get that message across to the general public?
I think it's hard to make that modal switch from cars. We're very reliant on them. But I think, you know, if we can increase the frequency and reliability of public transport, then, you know, I think other countries have seen where it works really well. But I think we need to, make that shift towards those modes of transport.
Overall, as we heard today, the levels of these gases have dropped in the last couple of years. So like that's a good sign for the future.
I think so, yeah. And in COVID, we had a wave where we had a period where we saw people, you know, change their habits and they were able to adapt in that environment. So I think, yeah, it's a positive outlook for the future ahead.
From above, Ireland's landscape may look green and thriving, but beneath the surface, many of our natural habitats are under serious threat. From drained wetlands to disappearing hedgerows and fragmented woodlands, the spaces that birds and other wildlife depend on are shrinking. This loss isn't just about nature. It affects the health of our ecosystems, our climate, and even our own well-being. Something that concerns Niall Hatch from Birdwatch Ireland, a leading voice in bird conservation and habitat protection.
Habitats are crucial, Terry. It's really what it all boils down to when it comes to nature preservation and restoration. After all, without habitats, there are no plants and animals. They are parts of those habitats, but they also depend very heavily on them. And really, everything about the nature crisis that we currently have in Ireland and around the world, it boils down to habitat. Either there's not enough habitat, or the habitat that's there is too badly degraded, or it's polluted, or it's disturbed, or it's under threat because of the climate, all of these things. But the actual places where the birds and the other creatures live.
Isn't it amazing how things have changed in the last 50 years or so? Because we were looking at the plants and the animals, we were looking at the birds, but we weren't really looking at the habitat.
That's the way you have to look at it now. I think it often is thought, if you look at reintroduction campaigns, you see a flagship species, something like a corncrake or a curlew or white-tailed eagle or a red kite, and their numbers are declining. So the argument goes, well, let's just breed lots of them in captivity and release them. And in the case of those species I just mentioned, that is working to a degree. With the curlews, it's head starting from wild eggs, but the same sort of thing. But that's only working because the causes of the decline were addressed in the first place. You have to work out why the animal has declined. It's not just because it felt like it. It's because something changed so radically in its environment they could no longer survive. And there's no point in breeding things in captivity and releasing them if they're just going to go to their deaths. You can artificially boost the numbers for a couple of years, but they'll fall off again. The only sustainable way to do it, and today's all about sustainability, is to make sure that you have the habitats in the condition they need to be, not just for those birds and those flagship species, but in doing that you're making sure that they're right for all the insects and the fungi and all the worms and the soil bacteria, all of these things that are just as crucial a part of the ecosystem. I think it's by focusing on some of those flagship, more spectacular, eye-catching species that you do that. When you talk about saving those birds, conserving those birds, really what you're doing is you're conserving the habitat that they represent.
And Birdwatch Ireland have been very much to the fore in that by buying up land. I'm thinking of Kilcool, for instance, an ideal place. I'm thinking of over in Mayo in the west of Ireland.
And managing the habitat, and once you manage the habitat, then the birds will come back.
Yes, and if you have obviously ownership and control of that piece of land, that means that you're able to do the things that you want to do.
Yeah.
Now, of course, at a national level, that's not a practical way to do it. We do have a national park network, heavily degraded in many areas. We do have organisations like Birdwatch Ireland that do have nature reserves. We're still only talking a tiny fraction of Ireland's habitats. The most important way to do it is to engage with the owners of the other land, be they farmers or the state or industry, whoever it may be, even homeowners in towns and in gardens. That's really important as well, and get buy-in from the local community and make people feel proud of their birds, let's say, but essentially you're making them proud of their habitats, the special things that they have that no one else has. That could be a beautiful bog in County Offaly, it could be an island off the coast of Mayo, it could be a suburban park or garden in the middle of Dublin or Cork, it could be UCC itself, this wonderful university campus. It's about recognising what you already have here and thinking creatively about what you could have and what you could add to that with just a few little simple changes. And then once you start making those changes and that habitat starts to improve, it's then self-perpetuating in many ways. You know, you get the species back, it brings more species back, it brings more species back, and then you see that nature, that natural ecosystem being recreated. And even at a very small scale, it's possible to do that. I think often when it comes to nature, there's a lot of doom and gloom. I think it's very important we have positive stories and good examples of success as well.
I often wonder, do the public realise the trouble that birds are in? It was mentioned this morning, 60% of our bird species are either on the red or the amber list. That's a real problem. Yet people go out and they'll feed the birds in the garden. They'll see the little blue tits and they'll see the robins and they'll say, oh, they're doing really, really well. But they don't understand the big picture.
That's absolutely right. And I think that's, you know, I'm all for people feeding birds in their gardens. I think it's a great advertisement for nature. It's a great way for people, especially for children, to come to a love of nature and understanding of it, to observe it and see themselves as affecting it. I think that's really important. So long may that continue. But I do think we need to realise also, and maybe spread the word a bit more widely, that those birds that come to our gardens, the blue tits and the robins, the blackbirds that we so happily feed, they're common and abundant, and they're the ones that are best able to survive because of humans. You know, that they can survive in spite of us. Or in some cases, the numbers have increased because of the habitat alterations that we've made. Mm-hmm. It's probably far more blue tits and blackbirds than there would have been if there weren't humans on the scene. And that's great. But people think that, you know, I often talk to people and I'm trying to convince them to join Birdwatch Ireland as members. I say, would you join Birdwatch Ireland? And say, oh, well, I'm already doing my bit. I'm feeding the birds in the garden. Mm-hmm. That's lovely, but from a conservation point of view, honestly does nothing.
Yeah, they're the commoner garden birds, and yes, they are common, and yes, they are garden birds, but it's when you talk about the curlews and birds like that, that's where we have a problem.
It is, and I think that also it's a hard sell sometimes, because a lot of these birds were once common. You know, a few generations ago, everyone would have known the curlew and the corncrake and the lapwing. Mm. Now, for a lot of people, most people in Ireland probably, these are just concepts. They're something that's nice. Isn't it a shame that they're gone, but it doesn't affect me directly in my life. I don't know this bird, so I can be, you know, I suppose on an intellectual level, I can be sad that it's gone, but it doesn't really affect me that much. I'm not really genuinely sad. You know, as a bird watcher and someone who grew up with these birds, I personally am genuinely sad. It's a tragedy I don't hear curlews in the Wicklow Mountains anymore. It's a tragedy that the ring ouzel is vanishing from this country. I remember as a kid listening to them in the Wicklow Mountains. And I think that we need to do more about that. Nature in Ireland is still accessible. You can still find these birds. I think we need people to realise what they're missing out on and reconnect people with nature.
But there is some good news stories. If I think, for instance, the cranes now are coming
yes.
back. There are one or two pairs and they're nesting here in the Midlands. And I was out only a couple of weeks ago and I was in County Wicklow on an upland lake with Declan Murphy and we were looking at goosander, and that's something that's really, really exciting.
It is, and that's a success story. It's a relatively new species to Ireland, and we are seeing these new birds thriving again. It's in areas where conservation efforts are underway. It's no coincidence that the you know, that's around a national park where you saw that happening. There's great work in that area going on, but there's still a huge amount of pressure in the Wicklow uplands, and we need to find ways now that species, the goosander, does exist there. We need to make sure that there's actually more habitat for them as they continue to expand, because it's not just the gooseanders that benefit from that, it's all sorts of other species, amphibians and fish and insects, so many things that benefit from that. I think that's a really important aspect to it as well. But the thing is as well, you know, with the cranes, there's another perfect example. A bit of, you know, of re-wetting of the depleted bogs in the Midlands. It's not the habitat it once was. It's not as good as an original pristine bog. It's the next best option. It's the only option really for that land. And already we're seeing the benefits of these cranes coming back in. Another great example of that that's happened in the last few years as well is to see the spread of buzzards across Ireland. This big bird of prey, this large hawk that people see. Now, often people think that they've been reintroduced in the way that the red kites and the eagles were to Ireland. But no, that's a completely natural recolonisation of Ireland. If you go back centuries, that was a really common bird. They were shot and hunted and persecuted out of existence throughout most of Ireland. They've managed to make a recovery in the last few years because most of that persecution has been removed. It's disappeared in more enlightened times. Still some illegal killing happens, but not enough to dent the species numbers. And when that's happening, we're actually starting to see that having an impact then on what we'd call the generalist predators, like the crows, and even things like foxes. Not that buzzards kill foxes, but they do reduce some of the roadkill and things that foxes otherwise are scavenging on. And that's helping to redress the balance and get it back to a natural predator-prey relationship. And then that in turn then makes it easier for ground nesting birds like your lapwing and your curlew to survive. So it's really about trying to get back to that natural ecosystem that evolved over millions of years, long before we humans just messed it up in the last blink of an eye.
It's so important that habitats are preserved, because without habitats, individual species will not survive. Organisations like Birdwatch Ireland are playing their part, but everybody, homeowners, local communities and government agencies, must do so also in order to protect the environment.
The EPA is an independent public body, so we are a scientific body. We have 550 staff and we do kind of three main things. We are an environmental regulator, so we regulate industry where they have the potential for significant environmental pollution. So things like pharmaceutical plants, cement plants, landfills, those types of facilities we regulate. In addition to that, we monitor the quality of Ireland's environment. So we monitor water quality, we monitor bathing water quality, air quality, and we monitor the level of greenhouse gas emissions in Ireland. And last but not least, we work with lots of other bodies. We work with government bodies, we work with NGOs, we work with communities, all coming together to try and protect the environment.
Another speaker on the day was Laura Burke, Director General of the Environmental Protection Agency.
Climate change is already having an impact in Ireland, and sometimes people think that climate change is going to happen in other countries into the future, but we're seeing it here and now. Temperature increases in Ireland. Ireland is warmer now than it would have been previously. We're seeing that we've got things like more frequency and intensity of storms. We're seeing even things like heat waves in Ireland, coastal erosion along the coast of Ireland in places, for example, in Wexford. You can see that the land is being eroded by the sea. And that's impacting people. It's impacting, the storms have impacted people. Even in recent weeks, we're seeing Storm Owen, and how that really impacted people from an electricity supply provision, from water quality provision. So climate change is impacting people on a day-to-day basis now.
Well, it's not all gloom and doom, because this morning you spoke about our emissions and they have been down for 2024. So that's good news.
I think there's some really positive things that have been happening. And one of the things that we've seen is in 2023, because when the EPA measures the greenhouse gas emissions, the levels were the lowest they've been in 30 years. That's really, really positive. And they were also low across all sectors. So whether it was agriculture or electricity, you know, all sectors were reducing their emissions. And what we're also seeing for 2024 is a continuation of that. And so what we're hoping is that when we measure the total year in 2024, we'll still see a reduction. So things are happening and it's moving in the right direction.
You also mentioned that land was important and can be used to reduce carbon levels. Can you explain?
But like it sounds, you can say, that sounds very complex when you're talking about land kind of reducing carbon levels. What we actually mean is simple things like afforestation. At the moment, our land emits carbon into the atmosphere. But if you do things like have afforestation, forestry on the land, that actually holds on to carbon. And it's really positive from a climate perspective. Also things like re-wetting lands that have been previously drained can have a really positive benefit on carbon. So land is really important, this, and what we do with our land and how we use our land is really important with regard to climate.
Some more good news. Our emissions are down and hopefully this can be maintained. And it's not just scientists that are making a difference.
Creative Ireland is a whole of government programme
and it's about the role that arts, culture and creativity can play in government policy. So I'm here in UCC today because we're talking about climate action and sustainability, and Creative Ireland has been thinking about the role that artists and the wider cultural and creative industries can play in climate action.
Tanya Bonatti is Director of Creative Ireland, an organisation that wants to encourage artists and the wider cultural industry to play a role in climate action.
This might seem a rather esoteric subject, but really culture change is what is needed in Irish society. We need to really shift some of our thinking around what we're going to do around climate action. And we think that the cultural and creative sector can play a very powerful role in changing people's hearts and minds.
Well, can you give me a few examples then?
Sure. Well, we have this thing called the Creative Climate Action Fund. It's taking place all over Ireland, around the country this year. It's using all kinds of creative approaches, from dance to design and architecture to the virtual reality sector. But all of these are placed in different communities. They're all run by local volunteer groups together with these creatives, and they're thinking about different practical actions around the climate crisis. That could be biodiversity, planting more trees, taking the bus to work, retrofitting your home, connecting with nature. All of these are different things that need to be done under our climate action targets. But we're offering, shall we say, a more fun and pleasurable way into doing that.
Listening to you talking there today, you said that we all know that there is a climate problem, but we have to move on now to the next stage. What are we going to do about it?
Well, all the research shows that Irish people and the Irish public are well aware of the climate crisis. Awareness is not our problem. Action is. We heard today about climate fatigue, that in fact in a lot of the public opinion, it's actually going lower down people's priorities because there are other urgencies like the housing crisis and all kinds of other things. So one of the challenges we face is, how do we make it salient? How do we make it relevant to people in your local lives? And again, we think that the creative sector offers a powerful way in. You might not be going to a public meeting about retrofitting your home. You could be at a festival of some kind in which those messages are communicated. We've done stand-up comedy shows about the climate crisis. It doesn't all have to be doom and gloom and serious.
And how successful have you been?
Well, that's what's been really interesting. We have UCC holding our feet to the flame, independently looking, are these projects effective? We're going to have that research shortly, but the initial indication is that this is a really powerful way to reach people's hearts and minds. People are engaging, people are more inclined to take action. So that's really fantastic news.
It's all about engagement, isn't it?
It is. It's all about engagement and action. I think what we've heard today is we need a greater sense of urgency and action. We have plans, we have targets, but we now actually have to deliver on those. And working that out at a local, individual and community level is the next step.
And what are your hopes then for the future?
My hopes for the future continue to be that the cultural sector plays a powerful role in the culture change that we need to make as a country to get to our 2050 targets. So that's my hope, that we can play our part in the big transition.
As public interest in nature and biodiversity grows, initiatives like conservation projects, citizen science and environmental education are becoming more powerful than ever. These efforts don't just raise awareness, they build real momentum for change. When people get involved, whether through local cleanups, habitat restoration, or programmes like the Green Flag, they become part of the solution. Professor John O'Halloran.
If I took away one thing from today, that sense of the arts and humanities and creativity, they bring us to a new place and they're generating new content, the new area of science. So I'm really optimistic about the future because we have the technology, we have the solution, we know what needs to be fixed. And I suppose what we now need to do is work respectfully with each other to help people and persuade people by facts and knowledge that the world can be better. And let's get rid of this fake news and have much greater critical thinking, because we'll delude ourselves and in the meantime our habitats and species will be disappearing.
And do you think we can pull the ordinary Joe soap along with us?
I think the so-called ordinary Joe soap is probably wiser than many of us. Actually, in my experience, it can often bring wisdom and knowledge that we can often leave behind and we don't hear. So I think it is about everybody together. Everybody should be in this together, because we're all going to be affected by it. Our children, our grandchildren, and even our lives and our quality of lives today have been enormously affected. If people just think back to COVID, on those dark days, we all went out into beautiful, might be in a small garden, it might be in a park, but we experienced nature, maybe sometimes for the first time, and we suddenly felt refreshed. Despite all the darkness, we heard these beautiful sounds of birds, beautiful plants and colours, and that's what makes the world a better place, and let's work at that all the time.
Mooney Goes Wild was produced by Derek Mooney.
Email mooney@rte.ie.